Hello and welcome to Let's Be Real. On today's episode, can we get some toast? Sniped by Marvel. Is that spoiler culture over? The Incredibles 3 and Finding Nemo 3 is likely happening. Anya Taylor-Joy only has 30 lines of dialogue in Furiosa. The top five biggest box office bombs of 2023. Shout out Disney. The Office reboot spinoff is officially in the works. Brad Pitt F1 movie is one of the most expensive movies of all time. We got a new Fantastic Four casting. It's a major one. Day one, A Quiet Place trailer reaction from us. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes weekend box office results. A new Lord of the Rings movie has been announced called The Hunt for Gollum. Planet of the Apes series is planned as a 9-film saga, and a new Godzilla times Kong movie is in the works. I'm James, that's Nan, and we're coming to you from Australia and New Zealand. So for this episode, if you got through that whole intro there, you'll see that we have so much topics. There are just so much that we could cover for this episode. And this just came like the last few days, most of the stuff. So I was like, why not we just do a little bit of a shorter segment and just cover off so many different kinds of topics. So we're going to go for a slightly different format for this one here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a big, juicy podcast. Let's get straight into this one, eh, Nan?
Sounds good.
All right. So can we get some toast, Nan? I don't know if you know too much about these accounts, but there's also My Time to Shine Hello. And these guys, they leak everything. So if you go on Twitter, you can look them up. They have really popular accounts because they leak everything. But anyway, Marvel Studios has issued some copyright strike thing on them, trying to uncover the identity for a social media account. Can we get some toast? They leaked Captain America, Brave New World images, and I think a little bit of footage from what I'm hearing. But the fact that hopefully they're going to go after this account and that they are trying to get the information so they can probably sue them or issue a lawsuit, this thing has actually sparked conversations over the last 24 hours about, you know, the impact of leaks coming, especially for these big project movies. And, you know, protecting the content integrity of all that. You know, some people out there are speculating that it could be, you know, a change in, you know, the spoiler culture that we're going through right now, because you remember things like No Way Home, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, everything kind of spoiled. I was on Twitter one day and I just came across from one of these accounts noting every single cameo that was in Multiverse of Madness, just ruined everything. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this? Is this a good warning by Marvel, and should these like leak accounts stick around?
Yeah, it's good. And no, these leak accounts can right off, fuck off. The whole point of watching this movie is to be surprised, you know. What's the point of that surprise if we're getting leaked about it earlier? I mean, leaks are everywhere nowadays. Like, I'm pretty sure you said one day you're watching an NBA game or something and a leak came up somehow. I can't remember the exact details. Like, even just when you're not even expecting, or when you're watching something for, you know, just a leak still comes out. And like, there's a lot of diehard film people out there that would rather just be surprised in cinema and, you know, feel it in the moment. But like, if you see it before, you're expecting it in the entire film. So yeah, these guys can, like I said, fuck off.
Nah, man, I completely agree. It's just, yeah, some of them are just ridiculous. I mean, I don't mind if they leak an image here or there, as long as they don't contain big spoilers, or if they give us very little bits of information to just kind of, you know, run off a bit and actually amp up our excitement. I think sometimes spoilers or maybe little bits of details can hype us up more. But if it's going too far, like, you know, cameos and plot details, it does ruin the experience. Like, imagine the world and not knowing that the other Spider-Men are in it, or that theory even having any substance to it, and then actually just seeing it.
It would have been so good.
Yeah, because as soon as you saw that Doctor Strange portal show up in No Way Home, you knew instantly that, oh, okay, here come the Spider-Man, even if it's your first time watching it. So it would have been a really great moment without the spoilers and, you know, all those leaks coming around. But these guys, they deserve to go, so I hope it's their time. All right, moving on to the next one. Keep this quick fire rate up. So recently, Bob Iger did say that they're going to be balancing Pixar with sequels and originals. So the source, Diz Insider, they report that, yeah, they are planning to do the mixture of the originals and the sequels. So a couple of the sequels that have been announced is Incredibles 3, not announced, but like it's in the works. They're about to be greenlit. Incredibles 3 and Finding Nemo 3. So we're going to have Inside Out 2 this year, coming in June. Then we got Elio next year, Toy Story 5 in 2026. You have Ducks in 2027. That's Pixar's first musical about ducks, I presume. A little bit excited for that one. But and then after that, you're likely going to have Incredibles 3 or Finding Nemo 3. Nan, which one would you prefer out of these? Do you like that they would do make any one of these a trilogy? And where could you see the stories going for either movie?
Incredibles 3 by far. I think that one is probably one of the Pixar's properties that is untapped, you know, like there's so much to explore, you know. You can explore the family, yeah, whether kids are kids or when they're teenagers or when they're adults and they're, you know, Miss Incredible and Elastigirl is like slightly older. You know, there's so much you can cover in Incredibles. Finding Nemo 3, if there's a sequel to that, either Nemo is a dumbass or Marlin is just a poor, poor father. Like, how do you lose your kid for a second time? Oh, geez. Like, nah. I wouldn't really want a Finding Nemo 3 or 2, technically, because that's just stupid. Unless it's like, even if it's Nemo having his own kid and losing him, it's just like repeating the mistakes of his father. It's just stupid. So,
okay, what about Finding Marlin?
Oh, jeez. Then Marlin's an idiot for finding himself lost.
He gets, like, kidnapped or something?
But, yeah, nah, Incredibles 3, I think that's probably, I would say, the next franchise Pixar could probably milk, you know, just because there's so much stories that you can tell within that own universe, and it helps that it's superheroes as well, so that's always going to get people into the cinemas too.
Yeah, for sure. So Incredibles 3, would you actually be excited for? You'd be hyped for if they announced it. Yeah.
I was hyped for Incredibles 2. It wasn't as good as Incredibles 1, but it was still a pretty decent film.
I think it's average, just really average. 6 out of 10 if I had to quickly put a number on it now. It doesn't touch the original, but I was super excited for it just because of that cliffhanger. For me, I'm complete agreement with you. Incredibles 3 is the better choice just because there's a lot more story and directions for the Incredibles franchise to go rather than Finding Nemo 3. You could do stuff in that universe, but you kind of have to shift away from Nemo and Marlin, especially if it's another like finding adventure. You'd have to shift to something else to make that work. But I do love the universe of Finding Nemo, and if they were able to do something, I would be on board. It would just have to depend on the concept behind the narrative. Incredibles 3, though, yeah. I think for Incredibles 3 to work, you need to have that time jump now. We need to see, you know, these characters evolving a little bit more. I think having it right off the back of Incredibles 1 and having Incredibles 2 directly follow on from that, I think it hindered the storytelling in it. So to have a progression in that would be cool. I mean, I actually saw, I forget her name. Who voices Joy in Inside Out 2?
Amy Fowler.
Yeah.
Powler.
Yeah. She said something recently about Pixar should do multiple sequels of Inside Out, and it follows Riley, young adult, adult, mother and stuff. I'm like, would you be down for Inside Out branching into a big franchise like that?
Definitely, because, you know, we're still experiencing the same character, but at different stages of their lives, and obviously different stages of your lives, you go through different emotions, so it'd be awesome to see how Joy can adapt that.
I know. I think that one would be quite cool. There's some interesting stuff you could do as well. And by the time we got to the finale, when she's like a grandmother, like, it's going to be like,
there's no joy.
30 emotions. No joy. Yeah. Just, there'll just be 30 emotions and Joy not being there. Just to get a Joy back. Okay. Yeah. Question for you guys, Incredibles 3 or Finding Nemo 3, which one would you prefer? And should Pixar is there any other properties that Pixar can do to fill out their sequel quota, as Bob Iger referred to? All right, Nayan, Anya Taylor-Joy, 30 lines of dialogue in Furiosa. So very much like Mad Max Fury Road, I believe Tom Hardy had like 62 lines of dialogue. So Anya Taylor-Joy is having about half of what Mad Max did in the first one. And so it got people to really question why. And the reason for George Miller is simple for him. He says movies should be fast. That's very much what Mad Max Fury Road is. But he believes that dialogue actually slows movies down. Do you agree with that statement? And does this change anything in terms of your hype for Furiosa, as I know it's your like most anticipated?
No, to answer the latter. And depends on the movie to answer the former. I mean, obviously, you can't have Oppenheimer without any dialogue, because that's stupid. But a film like Mad Max, it's perfectly fine to have its minimal dialogue, because Mad Max is not known for their dialogue, you know, it's known for the action set pieces. And that's probably what we're going to get in Furiosa as well, is we're going to get some grand action set pieces. And where Anya Taylor-Joy doesn't really have to say that much. I mean, I'd feel Chris Hemsworth would probably get the most, just because of his character and the way he turns out. So I feel he'll get the most dialogue, but it's still a very much a Furiosa movie at the end of the day. But yeah, it depends on the movie. If it's anything action, we all know action movies are just brain dead movies. You know, you just go there to watch the actions. So minimal dialogue on those films are better. But if it's something like a thriller or a drama, George Miller's comments are irrelevant.
Let me help provide some perspective for you. Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, is 2.5 hours. And we are currently 11 minutes into this podcast, and you've probably said more words than Anya Taylor-Joy says in that 2.5 hour movie.
That's good, but this podcast doesn't have any action in it, you know?
I mean, we're going super fast through all these categories, man. I mean, it's feeling like a lot more action intense, this podcast, but...
We're not smashing our laptops across another laptop, you know. We're not throwing spikes or anything.
I mean, we can certainly try that. I mean, yeah, I think this is too... It's still too little, I feel. It's just, yeah, I think that you need character in movies, regardless of whether it's an action movie or not. Just because if you are watching an action movie and you don't care about the characters, then... And it's good action. You're just watching good action. That's all it really is. But, you know, being tied to the characters means you have a bit of an emotional investment into the action. You care about that action a lot more. You're actually going through different kinds of feelings watching the movie. You're scared for the characters if they're in danger, all that stuff. I think George Miller is wrong for his take on that. And I know I'm not a director. He can make far better movies than I ever could. But that's my opinion, because I reckon Mad Max Fury Road, if you really were connected to those characters, that action sequences, they would be so much more intense. I think Mission Impossible does fall a little bit victim as well, because the characterization in that movie is not great, but it's better. And therefore, I think the action just pays off a lot more when you have that, you know, that emotional connection to the character. So 30 lines for a 2.5 hour movie, man, like, it's... That's ridiculous. We've probably heard at least, you know, 3 of those lines in the trailers by now. So
probably.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how it pays off. We're hearing good things, but hey, you know, it's George Miller, Mad Max work. So yeah, it doesn't change my hype, but his, I guess, reasoning for this, something I just don't really agree with. Yeah. But to you guys, what do you guys think on this one? 30 lines of dialogue for 2.5 hour movie. Is that too little, too much? Is it just right for this movie? Let us know down below. We'll have a chat about it. All right, Nayan. We covered on our last...
One.
You have, yeah, I know. This one's going to be a funny one. We covered on our last podcast the top 10 most profitable movies of 2023. That featured one Disney movie in it, all the way down in the 9th spot. But now we're going to cover the top 5 biggest box office bombs of 2023. So I'm going to note them all right now. I'm going to tell you how much money they lost for the studio. All right. So at number 5, Haunted Mansion lost $117 million to Disney. I don't know. Haunted Mansion at 5th. Number 4, we had Wish. It lost $131 million for Disney. That keeps getting worse. At number 3... Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny lost $143 million for Disney. Disney, yeah. 2023, they want to forget that. On the 100th anniversary year, by the way. Just keep that one in perspective right there. All right, at number 2, we have The Flash, not Disney. But it lost $155 million for Warner Brothers. And the DCU is at a close after 2023 movies. But at number 1, A lot of you guys probably know this one. That is The Marvels. It lost $237 million. $237 million for Disney. Four of these are Disney names. What's your takeaway from the top five biggest bombs of 2023?
They're all shit movies. Disney's fucking shit as well. They couldn't even do the 100th year anniversary properly. And it just goes to show in them having four out of the five. Four out of five. That's ridiculous. What's that, 75%? I don't know. I can't do math off the top of my head.
80%.
80%.
Yeah.
80% of the films was all Marvel. Was all Disney and the Marvels as well. That was always going to be a big box office bomb. I'm pretty sure that it had like one of the lowest openings for MCU. I can't remember.
It had the lowest opening. I got the numbers right here because it is shocking. The lowest opening ever for MCU. Mm-hmm. Domestically, in total, this is not an opening weekend. This is not an opening week. It's total, 84.5 million.
Yeah, so shit.
What? What? So I mean, bro, there's been MCU movies that have like opened higher than that in one day.
I know.
Like, more, yeah.
Ridiculous. The Flash, that's understandable. There was so much controversy and stuff surrounding it. You know, like, we always knew that that film was not going to be that good with the multiple reshoots and Ezra Miller's issues, mentally and physically. And then Indiana Jones, no one wanted another one. So Harrison Ford probably didn't even want to do another one, but he was forced to. Wish, what a shit way to celebrate your 100th anniversary in Haunted Mansion. Who cares about that film?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Haunted Mansion, I think the SAG-AFTRA strike started as soon as that was doing its entire press tour, so that was a huge bummer to it, but you spent too much on a movie about Haunted Mansion, like, come on, like, it's just, these are easy things to, like, not do in the film industry, at least in my opinion. For Wish, you always got a sense about Wish not being the same as that, you know, that classic princess movie with a cute sidekick. It just didn't have that same kind of magic feeling as something like Tangled or Frozen would do. So I think they tried to run with the formula and failed miserably just because it was all nostalgia based on Disney properties. Mm-hmm. Yeah, should just focus on making a good movie and not celebrating or stroking your own cock for it, that movie. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Yeah. This is the one I don't know how they failed. I know it's the movie is it's not awful. It's not like the Flashback or some. It's probably one of the best ones on here. But it's just I don't know how it made so little. It has a ton of nostalgia running behind it. The last one, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, that was worse than this, and it's the highest grossing. So I don't understand that how that didn't play like. Yeah, how did it make that much money? But I think the budget was just stupidly high for Dial of Destiny. And yeah, the Flash is a little more understandable. Actors couldn't really promote the movie or be a part of press because of Ezra Miller or being affiliated with Ezra Miller. The DCU is dying, it was already announced. So yeah, we knew it was going to be a bomb. The budget blew up because of reshoots and production issues. Still just a bad mismanagement on Warner Brothers' part for the entire film and production process. The Marvels, I can't even explain the Marvels, dude. Like, I know the Captain Marvel got, you know, the benefit of being the bridge between Infinity War and Endgame to get to a billion, but it's not the sole reason. Like, this has got, like, 200 million, 206 million worldwide, and there's, like, a $1 billion difference between Captain Marvel and the Marvels. And being the bridge between the two Avengers movies does not justify that $1 billion difference in total of the box office. So I don't know where it went wrong, but I would say that everyone kind of got the idea that this movie was pandering to different demographics for this movie and bringing in characters introduced in Disney Plus TV series that no one had really, not many people would watch, Ms. Marvel and definitely Monica being a completely almost irrelevant character, that's not going to bring much hype. So yeah, that one's a little understandable, but not much as well. But yeah, what do you guys think? Are these surprising at all? Because they're not really surprising, but if you were surprised, let us know. Just an absolute shocker for Disney in 2023. Can they bounce back better this year? Whatever your thoughts are, let us know down below. All right, Nan, this is one I'm very excited to talk about, man. It is The Office reboot. So The Office creator Greg Daniels and writer Michael Komen, he's not a writer of The Office, he's just a writer, but they are reviving The Office universe. And It's been noted as a reboot, at least when I started to read these headlines. And, you know, you look deeper into it, it's not really a reboot. It's more of a spin-off that exists in the same universe. So it's going to follow the documentary crew from the first Office. And they're looking for a new subject, pretty much. And what they find is a dying historic Midwestern newspaper. And the publisher is trying to revive it with volunteer reporters. So all we know right now is just that little concept right there. Two cast members have been announced, so it's fully going ahead. Domhnall Gleeson, he was on Ex Machina, Star Wars as well. And we got Sabrina Impacciatore. She was in The White Lotus, and I think she was quite highly regarded in that role as well. So she's Italian and just really been in Italian stuff besides that one. So, yeah, Nan, thoughts on the concept for The Office spinoff reboot thingy?
Yeah, I'm sort of glad it's a spin-off and not a reboot. If it was a reboot, I'd be a lot more negative. But because it's a spin-off, then, yeah, it's cool. It's all good. I mean, The Office was a great show, and if you can see different, you know, not just in Dunder Mifflin, the paper, but different aspects of it, I'm all for it. The original creator is on board as well and is working on it, so that's another plus as well. Domhnall Gleeson is a fantastic actor. If you see him Ex Machina, then he's great in that. Don't know much about Sabrina. I had a point. It was right there, but I got distracted on the actors. Oh, no, it's gone. No. Yes, as long as the comedy is good, then I don't mind it. If it's like forced humor or stuff like that, you know, Big Bang Theory is known for like that forced sort of humor. Like, it does have humor at times, but it tries to force laughs out of its audience. As long as it's just, you know, it's just genuine, funny jokes for good comedy, you know, then I'm all for it. And the main thing is getting the characters right for this, because if they're going to make a whole new series, then, they have to nail that. I mean, I wouldn't mind, like, something similar to CSI or NCIS. You know, you have, like, different regions and different stuff. You could do it with The Office, and it'll just be a bit more of an enjoyable watch, because, you know, it's 20 minutes.
I was wondering where you're going to go with that CSI take that you were doing. I was like, what? But yeah, no, different regions. Yeah, that can definitely work. I'm on board for this one. It took me a little bit of time. I'm like, I kind of just want like an Office sequel series, just because I want to see those same characters doing, or like a, you know, an in-between 5 and 6 season. I know I'm never going to get that, but I would just love to see The Office with those characters handling COVID, lockdown, everything that's happened now, like the stuff they could do, man, would just be, it'd be so good.
I could imagine it.
I know, right? Yeah, exactly. But that's a pipe dream for a fan of mine. You're completely right. They need to nail the characters. I think this this kind of humor, the mockumentary format and the Office universe itself, it thrives on characters. And you need to inject those characters with, you know, something really good and something really unique. And I think what works so well about The Office and why it actually has a bit of a still has like a massive following and a lot of rewatches is because of the humor in there. The creators of this one and the writers for this new reboot, they cannot be scared. And I mean that in terms of, I'm just trying to find the right words to word it. Like, a lot of the humor wouldn't go down now politically for some people, but that's what people loved about it. They love that type of humor, especially when it flows through Michael Scott. And Michael Scott will push the boundaries in terms of political correctness, but he has an endearing quality about him that he's actually trying to be a good person. So they need to inject something like that and to have humor where it's not scared to offend some people. I think people are always going to be offended one way or another at different things in this world. I think sometimes, you know, just appeal to the masses, appeal to the fan base of The Office, and just do what worked for the first one in this one. But to me, it's all about characters, and you need a central figure of Michael Scott, man. I watched a couple of Office episodes last night because I'm currently in season 8 of my rewatch. It's brutal right now. Without Michael Scott, man, it's tough. So you need that Michael Scott figure. I don't believe Domhnall Gleeson is that guy. I just don't think his humor really fits around or resembles a Michael Scott kind of character in any kind of way. I'd like to see him try, maybe, but I'd play it safe and get in that Michael Scott character in there. because it's pretty iconic. But yeah, what do you guys think about the Office reboot or spinoff? It's officially in the works now. It's starting production in July, I think. So it's coming up soon. If you're a big fan of The Office, let me know. Yep. And we can have a conversation about that because I'm very, very excited and just a little bit cautious. It might ruin one of the greatest shows of all time, in my opinion. Okay. Brad Pitt. He's starring in an F1 movie directed by Joseph Kosinski. This movie has been following the F1 season last year. I'm not sure about this season now of F1. But yeah, they've set up garages next to real F1 teams and been on the tracks as well, particularly in Silverstone. So the budget for this one has been reported to be well over $300 million. That places it in the top 15 most expensive movies of all time. And it doesn't even have a theatrical distributor yet. So a bit of a gamble, I think. Apple is the one funding this one. But yeah, well over $300 million. You can kind of see why. They're doing new technology, the smallest IMAX camera in the cockpit of an F1 car, which is really big stuff considering the limited space, the heat that can really build up in those areas of the car. SAG-AFTRA, that caused massive production delays. It increased the cost because they obviously couldn't film there and shoot at that time. But a lot of the additional costs have been using like real F2 cars. They've been adapted to resemble the F1 machinery that we see on the track at times. But, you know, there's also licensing to be able to use the image of the F1 teams being present at Grand Prix weekends and being on the track, training, you know, actors and driving. It's all increased to a massive budget. But to break even, and this is to avoid loss of money, it would need to make $750 million to $900 million. So, Nan, my question to you, mate, can it do that? Can it make that figure?
If you chuck the words Fast and Furious, maybe, because that's the only like racing film that can reach those sort of heights.
Oh, could you imagine?
But nah, I think this one's going to be I wouldn't say a bomb, because I don't think it will bomb. It's just that the cost to make this film was just stupidly high that it will probably end up being a good movie and a great movie, but I don't know if it's going to reach that $900 million. You know, racing is somewhat of a niche market if you don't have it, unless you're a boy racer. Gran Turismo, that didn't do that well at the box office. It did okay. And this could be tagged into the similar sort of, you know, Gran Turismo sort of thing. Siena and all those previous F1 movies as well, they haven't performed that well at the box office in terms of these numbers. So its back is definitely against the wall. And yeah, I don't know how they're going to, I have no idea how they're going to, because if they market it, it's just another cost. So I have no idea how they're going to do it. Like, how they're going to get that, how they're going to make money. It's going to be very, very hard for them.
It's going to be hard. You're going to have to do some sort of like really good streaming deal there. This movie has to be good. I mean, like, I don't know if it is, but Top Gun Maverick might be lightning in a bottle for something like this because, you know, jet fighters, that's a really niche market, even more so than Formula One or racing. And what did they get? It got up to like 1.5 billion, 700 million in the States alone. But that was due to a massively, really, really good word of mouth and the movie just being a great cinematic experience overall. And I'm not doubting that this movie can get there. At the end of the day, they share the same directors, with it being Joseph Kosinski at the helm. So I believe he can allow us to have a really great, you know, cinematic experience, you know, IMAX cameras, making it really immersive and allowing us to really get into, you know, the driver's seat for portions of this movie. If the movie's good and the story is great behind it, it can, but the odds are against its favor, I think. Yeah, it's going to be really tough to do that. I think something like Top Gun Maverick is lightning in a bottle. Very, very hard to replicate, but it has the potential. I'll say that much at least. Yeah. But yeah, what do you guys think about this? This is one of the most expensive movies of all time. I'm sure you're excited for it because it just sounds like a really great project to put on the screen. But did they spend way too much on this? Will it break even? Let us know your predictions down below. Okay. So Fantastic Four finally got a cast member right, and that is Galactus. Even though I don't think he should be in the movie personally, Ralph Ineson. He's been cast in Galactus. I wish I could mimic the voice and show you what his voice is like, because that's why I'm so excited about this. Just a really great voice. He's been in The Green Knight, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, The Witch. And in response to the announcement that he was Galactus, he retweeted, world-devouring cosmic villain, is it? I'll see what I can do. So, Nan, are you on board for Ralph Ineson as Galactus in Fantastic Four?
Yeah, I am. Like you mentioned it before, if you could somehow get his voice to be played in this, mm-hmm. people will understand where we came from. He has a fantastic voice, just in terms of how it's like. It's deep. It's like, you know, it's like a chilling type of voice. It's deep. You know, you've got the British accent as well, so that's just going to enhance it a bit more. It will be a bit more like cosmic if it comes from a British voice. Mm-hmm. For reasons why, don't ask me. I don't know. I just think so. But yeah, I think he's an awesome, awesome choice. His voice is going to, I think it'll mainly be a voice role. I can't see how they're going to do mocap like they did with Thanos.
Mocap.
Yeah, they might. I don't know. I have no idea mm-hmm. what capacity. We don't have any idea what capacity Galactus is, whether he's throughout the entire film or if he's just going to be like a quick 5-minute little cameo at the end. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But this casting, yeah, is good. If you've watched The Green Knight, you just know it's not a similar role, but you can do a similar type of voice as Galactic, as he did Galactus, as he did in The Green Knight. That's the sort of voice I'm expecting him to do.
Yeah. I mean, the voice is perfect. And you are right that, you know, the voice might be the most important element of this character. Because, I mean, mocap, I imagine they'll do it. Just because of, I guess, how respected Galactus is from the comics. I feel like they want to do a little bit of justice. But I could easily see it being a complete CGI mess at the same time. But at least that voice is going to be in the background there. And, you know, he can provide something that's quite intimidating and fearful. So I'm on board with him about this. The fact that Galactus is in the first Fantastic Four movie does make me pause for caution. I just think it's way too soon to have such a massive villain in this that I feel like it is a villain that can be applied to the entirety of the MCU. And I hope it just doesn't get reduced just down to the Fantastic Four team to beat. So, yeah. Ralph Ineson, I'm on board with that. I haven't liked the casting choices so far.
This is by far the best one so far.
Yeah. I do love Ebon Moss-Bachrach as the Thing, though. I think that one's a really good choice. But this one is as well. Perhaps there's potential here. We're going to have to see. This is going to be a really interesting movie going forward, because we've been aching for MCU to take over Fantastic Four for ages. So hopefully they can do it justice. I think this is pointing signs in the right direction. Let's see if we can get more hype for it. But what about you guys? What do you think about Galactus being cast in Fantastic Four and Ralph Ineson is taking on that role? Great choice. Did you have anyone else in mind? Perhaps you wanted Javier Bardem to take this role. Who knows?
No.
Whatever you... Nan saying no, but are you saying yes? Whatever you think, comment down below. Let us know. And Nan can have a chat to you about it. I'll let him take over that one. Anyway, Nan, I think this was both on our most anticipated list. Mm-hmm. Day One, A Quiet Place, directed by the director of Pig. It's called Pig, right? Michael Sanofsky. Yep. It's someone that's hard not to trust. That was his directorial debut, and that was a great movie. John Krasinski decided to direct If instead for some reason. Can't explain that one, but yeah, we got our trailer for Day One, A Quiet Place. It's kind of the... It's more than a teasing out. This is the proper trailer. This is the last one that we're going to be covering on this podcast here. But we got a much better look at it, Nan. The look at how this apocalypse started with these aliens coming down onto the atmosphere. What were your thoughts on the trailer? How does it look and feel to you?
Yeah, it pretty much looks exactly the same as a teaser, you know, but just with extended sequences. Like, it didn't give away a lot, except for Joseph Quinn and Lupita working together. Really, I mean, and obviously humans discovering these creatures for the first time and trying to figure out that they see based on hearing. Is it sound?
Yep.
Sorry,
yeah,
my,
sound.
My,
yeah.
My brain died there for a second. I was like you know, I know I got sight, but what's the air one?
Come on, man.
Based on sound. So I think that whole concept's really interesting. If there was a Quiet Place sort of film to be made, I would have liked Day One, just to see how us would have reacted to this sort of situation. And the foot, it looks really intense, you know, like you can just see everyone going like this and like moving as slow as possible, opening things as slow as possible to make sure it doesn't creak. And then like if just the smallest sort of sounds, you know, these creatures just come like lightning fast. Like you don't even have like a second to like run away or hide or anything. It's just like, bang.
Yeah.
It's insane. So and we're looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, this one felt way more like a big blockbuster than the other A Quiet Place movies, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the first two, I think the first one's really great. But the concept of being as quiet as possible, and you watch that movie in cinemas, it's quiet, it's dead silent throughout the most of that movie, except for that quite explosive third act. This one feels, yeah, particularly like a blockbuster, because they're not going to be quiet at the start of the movie, and it's just going to be them learning about the sound element of it. It's they're not the fact that they have to, like, that they're not quiet like the first one was, the way they were silent all the time, and it makes it super tense. This one feels like it's just going to be more blockbustery, and I don't know how to quite put that into words in the same way, or in the right way per se, but I'm looking forward to it. I have faith in Michael Sanosky. I think he can do a great job and make something out of this. Watching, and the reason why I was excited, the reason why I put it on my most anticipated was to see how these aliens came in and how the human race adapted to this new way of life of being silent, so these aliens didn't come in and kill them. But yeah, with that, you can actually make something super exciting, super interesting by, you know, just really crazy sequences. You're actually going to kind of see like a mob full of people killed. And this movie seems like it's going to be quite heavily R-rated, man. Like some of the shots in it, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're really going for it. Eh?
It like, does seem like that, eh?
Yeah, yeah, not holding back. So I think this is at least going to be quite a thrilling and quite a fun movie to go see. I don't know if it's going to reach the heights of the first one, even the second one. We'll have to see on how Michael Sanosky really pulls everything together. But Lupita Nyong'o there, I have complete faith in her. She picks really great projects, and I think she's a fantastic actress. There's anyone who's going to pull off, you know, that really scared look when, you know, being quiet, I think she can do a really great job at that.
Her, like, expressions with her eyes really make it.
Yeah, yeah, she's really great with that. But yeah, what do you guys think? Are you guys looking forward to this one? Tell us if you're anticipating Day One, A Quiet Place. Should they have gone with A Quiet Place 3, or should they have done this one here? Let us know down below what you thought. All right, Nayan, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. The box office weekend results are basically in. So Deadline and Box Office Pro, they are reporting that the box office weekend for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes will be 52 to 55 million. The international total is looking to be around 70 million. So you're looking at around a worldwide opening of about 125 million worldwide. So to put this into context of the other eight movies of the recent era, so Rise of the Planet of the Apes was 54.8 million opening weekend. Dawn was 72.6 million opening weekend. War opened to 56.2 million for its opening weekend. And as for the other ones, The Fall Guy, which fell flat last weekend, falls. So many jokes in this. Little puns here.
I ain't biting.
It falls 48% to 14.4 million. So it's a good hold, surpassing 50 million now. Challengers rounds out its top three by dropping 34% to 5 million for the weekend for a 38 million total ahead of its streaming debut next weekend. So, Nayan, let's keep the focus on the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes for this one, but it's looking like it might be the lowest opening weekend for an Apes movie, despite it being 13 years later than Rise. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it does look like that. I know that we did our projections earlier in our podcast and we're expecting it to be under 50. Looks like if it's going to keep that ape streak of hitting that 50, but it's still still what we expected. You know, we were expecting it to be lower than the previous three, and it looks like as if it's tracking that way at the moment, unless it goes to that high end of 55. But yeah, nice to see it kept on track off that 50 million. But
yeah,
who knows? These are only prediction, well, not really predictions, but like projections based on the Thursday, Friday sort of takings. So it could be less than that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Saturday is coming in now. So I think you are looking at something at 50 plus, at least regardless of kind of, because just because Friday opened up so well, you had, I think, Wednesday and Thursday numbers part of that. So who knows? But yeah, we were looking at something under 50 million projections, or tracking earlier on in the week suggested something under 50 million. So I think it's a positive thing that we are seeing over 50, but it's not promising that this franchise has not grown. I did see Dawn for the Planet of the Apes, you know, that was 72 million, but then War, which released 3 years after that, went back down to that mid 50s mark. And, you know, 7 years later, we're still at the mid 50s, and you can count inflation. I think it's something that we should be considering and injecting as part of the discussion, because if we want to use Rise as like, oh yeah, it's about the same as Rise, no big deal. Well, if Rise opened today in those numbers, or the same tickets sold, that's 76 million opening weekend. So it's not apples to apples there. But yeah, I think this franchise, its ceiling is Dawn for the Planet of the Apes. I don't see this franchise growing. And we're going to talk about the future of this franchise in a little bit. But there seems to be a pretty heavy ceiling on this whole franchise. The fact that it's not growing at all, despite it getting amazing like reviews and great reception from everybody, it just can't grow. It's concerning a little bit. As for that worldwide opening of 125, yeah, you might be, this is going to be an under 500 million worldwide movie, I think. Because I was wrong the other day, it has opened in China. It's just not doing great there. Yeah, so yeah, not too good. All right. Another thing. Oh, you guys, yeah, sorry about that. What do you guys think about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, the box office results? Do you find 52 to 55 million for the weekend a good figure for this franchise? Or do you think it should be growing based on, you know, its reputation? That's actually pretty positive. Whatever you thought, whatever you think, leave it down below and we'll get to it. All right, Nayan, you are a huge Lord of the Rings fan, my hottest take in all of film history. I love movies so much, but my hottest take is Lord of the Rings, the original trilogy, it's good, but it's not great. Hottest take, we all have one. Don't roast me in the comments, please. But
do it.
New Lord of the... No, don't do it. Don't do it. Nayan has worse ones. a new Lord of the Rings movie is in development. It's called The Hunt for Gollum. So Andy Serkis, he's going to be returning as Gollum. He's also going to be directing the movie. If you liked the original Lord of the Rings movies, I bet you did. Peter Jackson, he's going to be producing, and apparently he'll be involved every step of the way. So I guess he has a big creative part in this movie. So that allows for some security there for it to be good. But the thing that kind of catches me off guard, it's aiming for a 2026 release. This movie is early in script development. And 2026 release, which is in a year and a half way. So, Nayan, what are your thoughts on the fact that we got this movie, the concept of The Hunt for Gollum, the 2026 release, and does Peter Jackson allow you to feel positive or optimistic for this movie?
I can see this being released in the last half of 2026, if not the last quarter. So there's still plenty of time, especially if Peter Jackson and Andy Serkis is working tooth and nail to finalize the script. I'm excited for it, for sure. When you first sent me this information and when I first saw it online, all that was said was, new Lord of the Rings film to be made. And I was like, fuck, they better not be remaking the original three. I was actually I was getting so mad. And this was when I woke up and went in the shower. I was just so angry in the shower, like scrubbing hard and shit like that.
But that's what it was announced, bro. Like, because yeah. I was just before bed and I saw that. And I was like, what the hell? Why? And then the Hunt for Gollum thing, when I woke up, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I saw that and I was like, oh, okay. All that scrubbing for nothing, but it's all good. But yeah, the only thing I have a bit of an issue with is Andy Serkis as a director. I mean, he's not really known as a director. It's more as an actor and a mocap actor as well. That's his strength. I can't remember. I know I've seen stuff that he's directed, but I can't think of it at the top of my head. But that's probably the main concern. If it was Peter Jackson directing, my hype levels would be right up there. But I do feel real sure that he is producing it and he is going to be there every step of the way. That term, every step of the way, I'm going to assume is in regards to writing and helping Andy Serkis direct it as well. So he might be like an uncredited co-director technically. But and I'm interested to see where the story's going to be. Obviously, it can't happen after Return of the King. It has to be before. So, and why? Who's hunting Gollum? And why? He doesn't have the ring. I want to know the story already. Well, what's the premise, Peter Jackson and Serkis? What is it?
The hunt for Gollum. I guess it's just the hunt for Gollum. I mean, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they really adapt that kind of concept. I like the concept, but yeah, you're right, man. With Andy Serkis there, I don't have faith in this. I feel like Andy Serkis is he's a fine director, but I don't think he has the ceiling to be a great director. I don't think he's going to be bad, and I don't think this movie's going to be bad by any means. I think he's competent at what he does. He struggles to find that extra room to elevate something from good to great. And you can see it in his history of movies, Breathe. I don't know if you've seen Breathe or Breath, the Andrew Garfield movie.
No.
And I saw that one, and that movie has the kind of drama to be an Oscar Academy Award nominated movie. It's about Andrew Garfield's character. He just kind of gets like a disability from like the neck down or something like that. So he becomes fully paralyzed, but he's like a smart guy. It's something along those lines. But Andy Serkis just failed to tap into the material to really elevate it, make it super emotional. He just couldn't get there. Then you got the Netflix Mowgli, Legend of the Jungle, which was worse than its counterpart, The Jungle Book, the one done by Disney and Jon Favreau. And then Venom, Let There Be Carnage, that wasn't a good movie by any means. It played into what makes Venom great in a really ironic way, but failed to do anything special or cool or interesting with it. So, yeah, I don't have faith in Andy Serkis directing this movie. I think it'll be fine. Honestly couldn't give a shit about Peter Jackson producing. He produced Mortal Engines. He made The Hobbit. He doesn't have it. There's no reassurance that producing will help this movie be any good. At least not that I can see. If this movie is slated for December 2026, I'll feel much more comfortable. But if they say, summer 2026 release, I'm like, you're in early script development. Unless you shoot this movie in 60 days, I don't see it making it, at least where post-production in terms of VFX and editing is good enough, or the script development stage was rushed. But this does feel like something that Warner Brothers is doing to really, you know, get back into IP, man. Like, they're doing the Harry Potter series again. Of course they're going to milk every franchise they got. It just feels like something that's forced. I hope there's a real reason to tell the story, but I just don't have faith. What about you guys? Are you guys excited for The Hunt for Gollum? It's coming sooner rather than later. Andy Serkis as a director, have you seen any of his movies? Do you think that he's good as a director? Can he make this good? Perhaps because Gollum's his baby, he might be able to do something special with it. Who knows? Whatever you think, what do you predict? Let me know down below. I'll have a chat with you from there. All right, Nayan, Planet of the Apes. Now, you told me about your little theory about kingdom, empire, planet for the apes. Well, you were wrong about that theory, man. The producers for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, they see the Planet of the Apes saga being 9 movies. So you're going to have to think of much more words to put in front of Planet of the Apes before we get to just Planet of the Apes. So the producers do know that it's quite ambitious, but they can envision the entire story spanning those 9 movies. So we've done 4 already, but they did say with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, they can see or that they have set the stage for at least 2 more movies with those characters. How do you feel about this being a 9 film saga? Is there enough in there?
Does that include the 3 we've already gotten?
Yeah. So we've done 4 now, 5 more to go.
Oh, okay. God, that's a real slow burner, isn't it? Yeah. You made a comment about how, like, these films are just so slow to get to the point. And as myself and yourself, as a movie fan, we still think this is a bit slow to get to the Planet of the Apes type moniker, you know? So
yeah,
it might be a bit too much. I would have rather them achieve Planet of the Apes in this trilogy, and then maybe the next trilogy would be just, you know, exploring the world of Planet of the Apes, or just having, yeah. But we sort of knew that once Kingdom was announced that there was a plan for more movies, especially with these characters.
Yeah.
Even more so when we watched it as well. So there's still a lot to tell in, let's say, Noah's saga.
Yeah.
Still a lot to say. It's just the direction it's going to head in and what purpose it's going to serve to the larger story is.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be good. It needs to justify an extra 5 films.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think what they said regarding that Kingdom set the stage for the next 2 more movies, I think that's correct, and I feel like there is room for that. But, man, I am right about the whole snail's pace at this point. Like, as certain, and I noted this when I was, like, quite young, when Rise and Dawn was coming out. Like, what is the difference between Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes? Like, just the title itself, it means the same thing. Like, Sunrise is Dawn, for example. Like,
well, Rise is the apes rising against humans, and Dawn is that they're dawning on the humans.
But Sunrise is Dawn, so it makes no sense. I don't know how they can keep the titles up, but it alludes to my point about how it's such a slow pace for the Planet of the Apes to come to fruition. And even after 4 movies, it feels like we're hardly there still. They got so close to it in Kingdom, but obviously the end of the movie says differently. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to see how that goes. 9 movies is ambitious, but I mean, let's say for the sake of things, this could operate very much like Star Wars. 1 trilogy at 3 different time periods. So you could have this trilogy, say next one's in 2027 and then 2030. And then you get a nice 7-year break at that. So it's 2037 and then 2040 and 2043. This franchise.
Bro, that's fuck off. Like, when did Rise come out? 2012 or something? And you're expecting this, like, whole saga to finish in, like, 2040? Bro, okay, no way.
If it follows, like, Star Wars, where it's just 3 separate trilogies forming 1 story, then sure. I don't know what you feel is best, but they could do that, or they could just bang out all these 5 movies right now. So you would have the next one in 27, next one in 2030, then 33, then 36, and then 39. So either way, if it's 3 years apart between each movie, which feels realistic, 2039 is where this 9 film saga would end.
Yeah. Fuck, that's just so long for like a saga.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, I don't know if they can hold. How could you hold the audience attention for another 15 years? That one's a tough one.
That's a whole new generation right there.
Yeah, when you put it in that kind of perspective, it's like, I don't know if they have that kind of room or that stretch for storytelling. You've got to be able to hold attention. You may have the story, but is there enough momentum for people to stay invested in this kind of franchise? So, yeah, we'll have to see. But maybe just do it 1 trilogy at a time, I would say. Don't focus on the 9 films. Focus on your trilogy, your characters right now. Right, yeah, but what do you guys think about this? Planet of the Apes, should it be 9 films, 6 films, 7? Should they go longer or should they just keep going? Whatever you think, whatever you believe, let us know down below. Otherwise, Nan, we're going to finish this podcast up with our final topic today. And in the least surprising news of all, Godzilla X or Godzilla vs. Kong, Godzilla and Kong movie 3. The next one is coming. Godzilla X Kong has gotten $550 million at the worldwide box office this year. So yeah, no surprise that a third one is in the works between these crossover movies. You got Dave Callahan. He has been penned to write this one, and he has a whole mixed bag of writing screenplay credits. Wonder Woman 1984, we know how that movie went. Mortal Kombat, Zombieland, Double Tap. He's done Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. So he's had some major up and downs, but based on the writer that has been penned to write this movie, and then it's a Godzilla X Kong. Any hope, any excitement for this one?
Mm, Yes and no. Like, yeah, cool, we get to see more kaiju sort of action and some big beast destroy a city. I wonder what city they're going to go for next. Hopefully it's somewhere down in the southern hemisphere. I like to see them attack Sydney or like Auckland, you know, just be like, yo, that's where I live in the background instead of just some American city again. But yeah, like you said, this is inevitable. The fact that it made that much money and that these two characters are super popular, we're always going to get a third. It's not my preference to have it as a team-up movie. I would have preferred like a, probably, most likely a solo Kong film, even though that the past two films have been quite Kong-centric, or another Godzilla film, and then like, you know, have like a solo movie and then lead up to a team-up, then another solo movie and lead up to another team-up. I think that would have been a better way to do it, rather than just team-up, and trying to like build these two characters' stories at the same time within one film. It's efficient. It's time efficiency. For sure, but yeah, I'm just excited to see old Godzilla and Kong smash up another person again.
Yeah, I mean, like the entertainment between like these kind of two characters going at it together, I think that's something that's fun. It's hard to hate while you're watching it. It's just big blockbuster popcorn fun, honestly. So I'm fine with it. I knew it was going to happen. But yeah, I would have preferred, you know, a little bit of solo things along the way, space things out. But it seems like Warner Brothers is just looking at what's working. And these two being in the same movie is working. It's getting the money. It's turning out to be one of the biggest franchises that's currently going on. So, I mean, credit to Warner Brothers. They're going to milk what works. And hopefully they can do something interesting with Godzilla X Kong and just kind of lean into what works. And that's basically just big, dumb, blockbuster fun.
They do need a successful franchise after all.
They do, yeah. I mean, DCU, that's still a bit of a year and a bit away, so they're going to have to just rely on this one for a little bit longer. You know, honestly, the Godzilla and Kong is not the crossover I'm looking for. I'm looking for Kong and the Planet of the Apes crossover. We need that. That can be the villain of that third trilogy for those Planet of the Apes movies. That would be far more interesting. But yeah, no, Godzilla X Kong 3, it will not be on my most anticipated list. I am certain about that. But hey, let's hope Dave Callahan, the writer for this one, he can bring something to it. If he can tap into what he did with Across the Spider-Verse and Shang-Chi, and even Mortal Kombat has some cool sequences, hopefully he can do that and bring out some something interesting with Godzilla X Kong. Just interesting human characters. Then I think I can get much more on board with these movies than I am right now because, yeah, I need something that's also good to invest in outside of just monsters bashing each other up. We want some emotion in that series anyway. Otherwise, Nayan, we're done, man. So much we went through. We did it at a good pace. We're going to speed up the ending to this. A very stacked potty. Yeah, we're going to end it now because, as you can see, Nayan is wearing the Warriors shirt. He wants to go watch the game. I've kept him on here for 13 minutes too long now. We'll cap it off here, guys. Thank you so much for supporting. Hopefully you managed to watch or listen to our entire podcast and all of our takes on all of these news announcements. Otherwise, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube, like, comment, do all that stuff. If you don't want to watch us, you want to listen to us, you can do that on any podcast platform, mainly Spotify. Otherwise, that is going to be it for us today, guys. Thank you so much again for joining us. We'll catch you next time. Keep bringing the hype. Peace.
See ya.